Welcome to the Dividend Talk Podcast, episode 31. Is Intel going down the swanny? Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Dividend Talk. I'm your co-host, Engineer My Freedom, and today I'm joined with European DGI. This is a podcast where we discuss our passion for dividend growth investing with our own unique European flavor. If you're new to this channel, please hit the like button and subscribe to us, and check out our previous episodes on YouTube and Spotify. See you on the inside. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. I'm joined as always this Friday by European DGI. How are you doing, mate?
Really good, and it's actually quite comfortable here on the inside. How's for you here on the inside?
Warm. It's raining outside. I can hear it pelting my window, so I'm glad I'm on the inside here.
And by the way, it will be minus 15 to minus 20 degrees Celsius here this weekend. And tomorrow will be full day of snow, and we have already a few days snow, so it's really exciting here.
Oh, wow. Snow is a novelty over here in Ireland. We don't get it much. I think the last time I seen snow properly was in Poland. I went to Zakopane, a really nice place for skiing, but We don't get it too often, and when we do, we just can't hack it over here. Like, the whole place shut down for 3 days last time. We just not able for it.
Ah, but you get rain, lots of it. So you've got other parts of nature.
Yeah, it's great.
Anything that caught your attention this week in the news? Anything?
The news is just boring me lately. It's Brexit and COVID and all this, but what I did do is I found an article that I found rather interesting, and it's something I think we've spoke about before in terms of the market being out of touch. But there's this guy, I don't know if you know him, called Jeremy Grattan. I think that's how you pronounce his surname. But he's a portfolio manager, and he has a history of predicting when we're in bubbles. He's done it throughout 2000, 2008, and even the Japanese one back in the 80s. And he wrote an article, and I'll post a link in it, about how we're showing signs of we're in the last stages of a bubble at the moment. The article is called Waiting for the Last Dance, but it's interesting to compare against previous years. It still shows that there's room to grow another couple of percent, or like it might be a couple of months down the line, but the signs are there that the bubble is there, and when it pops, it might pop hard. But it's a good read. I'll post you the link, and I'll post the link here, and I think it's worth checking out.
And are you afraid now?
Never afraid. I think I've been expecting it as well myself. Like as I said, we've spoke about it. We've said it on podcasts. I'm not going to change what I do at the moment. Part of me is like, do I hold off on my monthly contributions, but then I'm like, nah, that's just trying to time the market, and if Bitcoin is anything to go by, as soon as I buy or sell, it goes the opposite direction. So just keep plodding along.
Well, I wouldn't mind a bubble popping a little bit, so gives me more value for money, right? So
that's where you make your money, and I suppose if you read that article, he does say he missed a couple of years of gains, but he more than made up for it when the bubble popped, and he was able to get in and buy at really low prices. So part of me hope he's right, but part of me hopes it's not as severe as what he writes about.
Let's see. I mean, yeah.
How about you? See anything that caught your eye this week?
Yeah, something in bubble territory, because Katie Wood and her gang decided to create a space index. So I think you'll get really high from that. But this Virgin Galactic popped 20%. I mean, I think the Securities Exchange Commission should start looking into this, because every time when they when they say they want to buy something, the stocks pop, and when they sell it, the stocks drop. So they can just almost on their own dominate and manipulate the market at the moment. Because the thing is, they're investing also in a lot of small cap stocks, right? Yeah. So Tesla, okay, but all the other stocks, they have so much influence there. Like, anyway, I find it amazing, you know, how much marketing this company has, because now it's quite easy for her to get returns, right? She just says, maybe this company will already just on the gossip go 10, 15% higher. I mean, yeah, that's how you become a successful investor. And it's a bit Chamath, he has the same. Yeah. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it takes a lot to build up a reputation like that. So,
definitely.
I'm sure it's just a coincidence that these companies pop just as announcements are made. But
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think if you are able to trade and ride it, yeah, and take the momentum, I think you can earn lots of money with this by following her. But I can't. It's not in my circle of competence.
Yes, it's not mine either. As I said, maybe I could counter if I bought it will just plummet her gains and it'll just go to zero. She might lose it all. If I stop, I don't know, but
I'm sure she will find your phone number and call you like, why did you start investing in this?
Oh, she's safe for now.
Cool. So then let's start about our stock analysis for today. Another bubble stock.
Yeah, we chose this stock because it's been in the news over the last week or so, because they've changed their CEO. I'm blaming you. I've said this on Twitter. I'm blaming you that this has happened. We had our dividend day and we watched Intel's earnings live and it dropped like 9% overnight. And you did a little one pager and sent it to poor old Bob Swan. And now he's out of a job. So I don't know how you can live with yourself.
Well, you know, I like his last name. It's Swan. So, sleep well at night. So I think he sleeps well at night. I don't care about this guy. He just didn't perform. He ruined their business when it comes to chip production and R&D there. So he has all the rights to leave, and he should get a kick in his ass after it as well. And he might be the best and nicest uncle for his cousins and so what, but I find this in the category of worst CEOs of the decades. And I know he didn't even do it so long.
Yeah, but I think he realized that, and to give him some credit, he did just step aside willingly. He came under increasing pressure after they announced another delay in their chips. So he's been under investor pressure for pretty much his whole tenure, and he just said, look,
rightly so.
He tried to make a change. I think he was quoted as saying he's going to move from PC to a more data company, something along those lines. And he did try. It's just the wrong move at the wrong time for him, and he's paid the price. But look, he stepped aside, and probably with a handsome pay packet to boot.
Yeah. Well, you can give some back to the shareholders for that. But Sir Pat is coming in from VMware. Do you know anything about him?
Pat actually was with Intel for 30 years before that, and part of probably that golden era when there was lots of talented engineers. In fact, I think he was the first chief technical officer there, CTO, and really kind of led the company during that era, and then left and went to, is it EMC? They were the parent company of VMware. He's done very well at VMware, and now he's back. What I do like is that they are now taking someone from an engineering role back, because this is an engineering company at the end of the day. And with all respect to Bob, he's a finance guy, and they're not the kind of guys to run engineering companies. So I'm kind of hoping he takes it back to the engineering roots, and it might stop this talent loss that Intel have been losing over the last couple of years or even decades. Maybe now people might start coming back and trying to build this company back up.
Yeah, that's what I really liked about the announcement, that it's really a tech guy, and that's what such a company needs. And not a bookkeeper.
Yeah, but not just a tech guy that knows the company inside out. Like, he spent three decades there. So he knows Intel, he knows the market very well. So he looks to be the right man for the job for me. And I think the market appreciated that with 10% overnight.
And I think it was Dividend Wave who mentioned, I think Dividend Wave, yeah, who also mentioned that just Bob Swan leaving, the stock increased, or the market cap increased with 13 or 15 billion. So imagine your CEO leaving, your successor comes in, and the stock pops with 15 billion. I mean, that was really your value, minus 15 billion.
What's your value? Minus 15 billion. Wow, it's a lot. But hey, it puts a lot of pressure on Pat from the get-go. He has a mountain of a job there. I mean, it's not an easy task. They're delayed in their chips, and AMD, NVIDIA, Samsung, Apple, and Microsoft, they're all nitpicking at this market share. So he has to stop that rot first and try and turn this company around. So it's not going to be an easy task for him.
Yeah, because what I noticed, and just, I mean, it's a bit what just comes to mind when you say this, over the last few years with Tesla as well, Apple, Microsoft, I think what they are seeing in the supply chain, that a lot of margin is going to the chip producers. And I think they see a profit margin there for themselves. So they have an interest in starting to control more of the supply chain. And I think Tesla has always been a really great advocate of building everything from start to end, right, themselves. And you see Apple moving into this space now. Microsoft announced it as well. So it's also really interesting to see, like, what's still the added value of Intel if such big companies start designing this themselves, because they think, like, they can do it just as good, actually.
Yeah, well, it does depend on that quality, doesn't it? Really, that's what it will come down to. Yeah. I mean, these chips are becoming ever more important. I had actually a snippet in the news that I saw was that the automobile industry, there's a shortage of chips. So they are so important in everyday life at the moment that quality has to be there. So maybe that's their advantage at the moment. The ones that they do produce are good. They do the job. Yeah. Apple and Microsoft, they still have to catch up on that end of things. So they still have a slight advantage, but no, you're right. If these guys come in and can produce them cheaper and control the supply chain a bit more, it puts Intel under a little bit more pressure.
So we have spoken now a little bit about the bear cases, right? And that's normal because Intel is a beaten down stock. But what do you think their main catalysts are? Are the things that they really, if you're an investor, why you really invest in Intel at the moment? And we will look later at the fundamentals and the price, but more business-wise.
Yeah, I mentioned that Bob Swan tried to transform them into a data-centric, more a data-oriented company. And to his credit, he tried. May have been the wrong time, but we can see in their figures. I mean, back in 2015, the data part was 23 billion. And the PC-centric with the chips was about 32 billion. If we fast forward that now to 2018, 2019, it's nearly 50-50 at the minute. So you can see the data-centric is starting to grow. They have a few segments, mini segments in there, like the Internet of Things group. I don't even know why that's a mini segment, but they have Mobileye, which is really insignificant at the moment, quite small, but it's a gamble and a good acquisition at the time. But the main focus there is on computer and storage and network functions. And look, we know that this is becoming increasingly more important. Intel as a brand may have an advantage here. So I really see that segment progressing. But is that enough to carry the company along with the chip? I'm not so sure at the moment, but it does look, it looks like they're at least trying to progress the company.
So to me, it sounds like the typical turnaround stock, like General Electric today, IBM, Intel, where it's really important to look for those catalysts, right? Or that means then that you really need to start thinking about a cigar butt here. So that's really interesting also to look now that we go into the numbers. It's a cigar butt that we just smoke it until the last puff and we get still lots of value out of it. Or will the catalyst give us a nice turnaround?
What's also probably something you should note as well, you look at Intel, yes, they are giving up some market share, but their market share far exceeds their competitors. You add TSMC and you add AMD together, and they still don't generate the same revenue as Intel. Mm-hmm. So they are ahead. They're so far ahead at the moment. It has been nitpicking down, but I mean, I can't see that disappearing to zero in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So certainly over the next 10 years, there's a case there. As I said, we look at the figures later, but they're a dividend growth company. They like to reward their shareholders. So I still think over the next 10, 15 years, they're safe. It's just, as you said, the margins are getting lower and the likes of Samsung and Apple are chasing. So how long can they stay at the top is the question.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe this is the right time to start looking into the fundamentals then, into the figures. So one thing that I noticed when looking at, for instance, their income statement and such, right, is that I saw their margin declining over the years. And I found that really interesting because, to your point, the revenues have been rapidly growing actually over the last few years. I know they had a little bit of a dip, if I'm correct, in one of the last quarters that didn't go so rapidly as expected anymore. But that was quite surprisingly, of course, the revenue growth, but I saw the margin declining as well at the same time. And I'm not sure. I couldn't figure out where the margin decline came from because I didn't see it so much in the investment space. I didn't see the R&D suddenly bumping up a lot. But what I did see was that just the cost of goods sold were increasing. So that's interesting. So they are becoming more expensive effectively, and therefore the margin.
We see that, but you look at the margin over the last 10 years, it's always been above 60%, 61, 62. 2013, it dipped to where it is now, about 58, 59%. 2018, it was still 61. 2019, it's down to 58. So they're still within the mean. I mean, I can see why you're concerned, but if you look at their competitors, say AMD, for example, their gross profit margin is 42%. NVIDIA was at 60-62%, which is in around Intel. So yes, it is declined. They're getting a little bit more expensive, but it's still within industry average, and it's still above some of the competitors. So I'm not concerned about it dropping in 2019. If we continue to see it drop over the next 2 years, 3 years, then it's a cause for concern. But I've seen a dip like this happen before with them, and it's not overly concerning for me at the moment.
Cool. Good. And then if we look at the earnings per share, I think this is where probably your point comes, a nice growth story with the data center or the data focus, because I think back in 2017, they still had an earnings per share of just under $2.
Yeah.
And they are now having more than $5 of 12 trailing months. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trailing 12 months. So that's amazing.
It popped there from I think 2017 to 2018. It popped nearly from $2 up to $4. Well, I have a figure here in front of me. I can't see it, but it's just over $4 it popped up. And I think that was driven by higher revenues. There was a margin expansion. And then obviously the share buyback. So they've been buying back shares over the last number of years as well, quite aggressively. So all those things kind of came together in 2018, and there was a nice pop in earnings from.
Yeah, so what I could see that I'm doing this out of my head. I think they've been buying back shares at the rate of 5-6% per year, which is massive. Yeah, usually we see 1%, 2%. But hey, if the company is on such a low multiple, then it's also easy, of course, to buy back a lot of shares with a meaningful impact. I think from that point of view, that's brilliant that they're using their cash to buy back shares, because now is the time. If we always talk about buybacks, then this is the time to buy massively back if you believe in the future of your company and you have enough cash to fund innovation.
Certainly, yeah. And it's one of our major gripes, isn't it, that some companies buy at extremely high prices, and we know this. So it is a good time for them to buy back their shares. And you're right, they have been doing it at a very, very decent rate. I mean, they had over 5 billion shares back in 2011. It's down to 4.4 now. So they are they're certainly trying their best to add value to our shareholders.
Yeah. And what I also really liked about Intel is because of the, the earnings increase and their slow dividend growth, they have a payout ratio of around 25 to 30%, which is really healthy. Mm. And I really like that because it gives them still so much room also in their cash flow to just spend the money wisely, right? So they don't have what some companies have, like IBM as an example, or others that are having high payout ratios at a certain moment, and they are really getting into a cash squeeze, and the only thing they can do is borrow more and more and more debt. And to be fair, they have been borrowing quite some debt over the last year. I could see there was quite a big bump. Mm-hmm. But generally, their numbers still look quite good there in the balance sheet.
Yeah, the dividend has been raising, and the free cash flow has been raising with it, kind of at the same rate. And for me, that's important. I like to see the free cash flow increase as long with the mm-hmm. dividend. It makes it a little bit more sustainable. And as you say, under 40, 50%, even lower at times, it certainly holds out that they can continue to keep paying it. And that's important. That's important for me. That's one of the things I want. Can they pay me a dividend in the next 10 years? And I think Intel can.
Yeah. Oh, good. And so if we maybe then go a little bit into some of the metrics of the balance sheet, right? Their interest is really well covered. No issue there, 40 times or something like that. Debt to equity had a little bump from 33% to 48%. So it's still mm-hmm. still well in the margin of what I always look at, let's say, for such a company should be under 60%. I checked it, and they've been just increasing their long-term debt, also for for some share buybacks, but mainly also for investments, what I've seen, because their property, plant, and equipment got also a nice bump on their balance sheet. And they still and the rest of the, so let's say like that, their debt grew with around 25%. Half of that went into PPE, and the other half went into the cash balance.
Yeah.
So this is nice because it means they're really using it for investments. And the other half, let's see, maybe they even do an acquisition with it. I don't know. But it sounds like and maybe that was why Bob Swan was a good bookkeeper, because at least that's what he has been doing well, bookkeeping.
Yes. Yeah. The stuff investors don't see on the outside. The boring stuff.
Exactly.
Have you checked the goodwill on? I know you like to check that on the balance sheet.
Yeah, it was quite reasonable. I had nothing that concerned me there. Around 27 billion on total assets of 145. I didn't find it overly massively, like we saw the other day. That's almost half balance sheet. So no, it's quite okay. It's less than 20%.
Okay.
What do you think about their valuation? Because this is okay. So balance sheet, good. Income statement, well, the trend is not everywhere going nicely, but still overall it's going really well with the income statement. So what do you think then from a valuation point of view?
From a valuation point of view, I haven't kind of fairly valued at what they were. When they dipped that 10%, that time they were an automatic buy nearly for me. I ran two models, the dividend cash mm-hmm. flow and EDM, and they are in around 60. DDM was 54, and discount cash flow was 65 euros. So in around, if at the half them, in around where they are now, 57 euros. So they're fairly valued. I don't see much value in price-wise, but I mean, they're still not overpriced. And for the dividend and from what we've seen with the cash flow growth, I still think they are worth considering, I suppose, at this price.
Yeah. Okay. So to sum it up then, they are having quite some headwinds in their chip production capacity, let's say, by losing the battle when it comes to 7N millimeter chips, because they need to wait till 2022 while the competition is already producing it.
Yeah.
And delivering it.
But I did see an article, and was it that Dividend Wave again shared this, that they are considering outsourcing this now to that. And look, I think that's a good move, that they realize they're behind. Then, as you said, they're not going to catch up that easily, but at least if they outsource this, they can maybe use that time to work on the next one ahead and try catch up. And the margins will take a hit. It'll probably look more like AMD's margins, down around the 40%, but It might be worth doing just to try and catch up a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, so when we have now analyzed this company, right? My conclusion is that it's just the perfect turnaround play. But it's a bet on the CEO. That's really what it is about. I have it in my watch list, by the way, in my allocation strategy. So I consider one of the 40 companies that I wanted to own. But I had this before I really started to look deeper into it, because I just wanted to have a semiconductor in my portfolio. So I thought Intel. Now that I know more about it, I'm staying away from it. Mm-hmm. Simply because I think this is such a market with high barriers to entry that I would like to see first good news. So I don't need to have the share set this price. I'm okay if it would be, let's say, at 70 or 80. Yeah. If they show growth, if they show me a catalyst other than a new CEO, then I could be interested in it again. Until that time, I probably spent my money elsewhere.
Yeah, but I have a different view. I look at this from a dividend growth perspective, and with a 10-year horizon, I cannot see the dividend being cut anytime soon. As we can see, the balance sheet is fairly okay. Yeah. The cash flow is growing. The dividend is as safe as it can be. So I'm quite happy to own them. They've actually popped up to, I think, second or third in my portfolio because of the recent 10% drive. So it's one I'm keeping an eye on. I won't be adding to my position at the moment. There's other opportunities there, but I'm certainly a little bit more bullish.
Please stop talking, because if you keep on talking, maybe you change my mind even so. So let's stop this topic before I start putting a buy order in. You sound too convincing.
I'm doing my job right then.
Good. No, but thanks, EMF. I know it's a nice position for you, and I really cross my fingers that it will go well soon, and maybe I will regret it upcoming years. Let's see. Okay. So a nice conversation about this. So let's look at the listener questions section. And of course, good old Phil is back again with the first question. So he's asking, have you ever considered to register your shares of your bigger investments? And have you ever considered to register your shares of your bigger investment?
We copy this question twice. I'm assuming he means registering with the company, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never considered it. I don't know if it's something you've done. It's never crossed my mind.
I considered it for if I want to have one of those French companies that give a dividend loyalty.
Okay.
Bonus of 10%, for instance. So yeah, in that case, but I've never done it. It would be actually a nice fun exercise to do it.
Yeah, I just thinking that would be nice to do, and I wonder if there's any other benefits to doing that. But the 10% bonus is certainly one of them.
Exactly. Thanks, Phil. And let us know whether you have done it. Next question is from Piotr, a regular listener as well. And he's asking about the frequency of following the stocks in our portfolio. So following up on it. So do we do it quarterly, on a yearly basis, or other? And what do we check?
Yeah, it's generally quarterly now. I mean, for me, I've been changing my portfolio and how I structured it over the last while, and I'm still a couple of companies short, so I'm still five companies short of my desired portfolio allocation. So I'm still working to find those stocks, but I do find myself checking quarterly on my companies, just checking the rounds, make sure they're growing, make sure there's no dividend cuts, not negative, any acquisitions that they make, how their debt down, and just things like that. So it doesn't take too long. Probably takes longer when we're doing it for the podcast. I probably wouldn't spend as much time only for this, but I wouldn't. I mean, I look at Twitter and I see growth investors, or not just growth investors, just investors in general, and they're talking about 5% gains a day and on a daily basis. That's tiring for me. I just don't have the time to do that, so I just check in on it every now and again, every quarter when earnings are coming up, and that's about it.
Yeah, I have the same. So what I particularly look at are my top five, top six stocks, because they have the largest value. So on those stocks, I'm more closer on the news. So I'm really following Microsoft closely and such, and also the earnings reports, because it's simply my largest holding. The same for Shell, which is a large holding, or Upvi. But what I can say generally, if I'm interested in a stock, that means it passes my screener. And once it passes my screener, I might, if I'm already convinced, then after reading up a little bit, also what I often do is I watch on YouTube the CEO, hear what they say, check a little bit like how their products are being perceived on YouTube, specifically when it's a B2C. And then I might dip my toes into it by initiating a small position, and then I really start studying the stock. And once I've studied the stock, then it's really like just monitoring it. I have in my head approximately what the fair value is. If I suddenly see that the share price drops below it, that usually grabs my attention. I will look into it. Hey, what happened? And also vice versa. But you really go then into maintenance mode, and I think that was what you were also saying.
Cool. So we have another question from Dividend in Czech. And he asked for our opinion on future prospects on REITs and trends towards e-commerce. He owns a couple of shares in German equities, such as DFAMA, that rent out supermarkets and home improvements. And he's just asking, what are our favorite real estate companies in Europe?
Yeah, so for me, anything, let's say with retail, I'm staying away from. I really don't see future for many of the retail, let's say, and the office space. I think what COVID-19 has shown, and I see it also, and I hear it from colleagues in other companies, that probably they will work more from home going forward. So this means probably that offices can shrink in capacity. So I think, and then retail as well. I think we got more and more used now to shipping and everything. So I think these are industries that I would stay away from a real estate investment trust point of view. Where I'm bullish is more like on the urban trends that we see in the millennials and their need for housing, which is really, really hard for them to start buying their first house. There's also an older generation going to the elderly houses at the moment. So if that's where I would bet my money on with the real estates. And I just like Castellum from what I've seen as the European REIT. And that's the one I'm most familiar with. I'm studying that at the moment. And that would be one that I would like.
Yeah,
How about yourself?
they do look good, and there is another company that I'm going to choose my stock pick, so I won't give it away right now. But like you, it's I would stay away from retail and office space. I heard something interesting today from an Irish perspective that they are considering bringing into law that you can request to work from home full time, and which would be a really interesting law, or something that could change that whole landscape. So it's something to keep an eye on. There is one that's not European, and it was the Wolf of Harcourt Street who put me onto it, which is IIRP, which are industrial, but they're also getting into the cannabis market, which is an up and coming market, and it might be something to look at as well. But yeah, similar to you, and we'll see my other stock pick when it comes to later on the show.
Okay, and then we have also a frequent listener, Sego, who's asking, what are the criteria for you to select a company to analyze? And in the same question, he asks if you have any thoughts about Realty Income.
So I can tell you what I do. So initially I run your basic screener, so you're doing your dividend growth and your earnings and so on. So there's four metrics on it, and that's just to get them into my watch list. Once they're in my watch list, I have this template now. I've taken sources from you, from the Sunday Investor, from lots of different people, and just automated where I just pop in their financial statements for the last 10 years. And it automatically shoots out the figures. It's what I used for this analysis. And I wrote a blog post on it last week and shared this template. But what I'll do then is that gives each company a rating out between 1 and 100. It also rates their dividend between 1 and 100. And I have different levels, and if it gets above, say, 60, 65, that's enough for me then to say, okay, I'm going to look deeper into it. If it's above 70, I might buy a small bit. That keeps me interested, because sometimes I'm like looking for the next shiny thing. But at least if I have a small position in it, I will definitely then go back and analyze them further. So that's kind of my process. I don't know how you tend to do it.
So I want to keep it really simple always. So I look indeed a little bit at few simple metrics, and I want to share a blog post about it, because I realized the other day that I didn't even write about it, and I get this question quite often. And for instance, for me, I don't even want to look at the price to earnings multiple in my screening, because those are usually, they might be actually skewed. So for instance, if a company had a bad quarter because of a large write-off, then it wouldn't pop up in the screener. But actually, this one-off event might be there for a perfect buying opportunity. So I try to really, really keep it as light as possible, my screener. But after 6 years of investing, I've seen so many stocks that I've, over the years, I've picked my favorites already in dividend growth. So I don't need to screen that much anymore, because I've got like 100 stocks in my head. And when they pass by, I usually know at least a one-liner about the stock. But 2-3 criteria is enough for me. And my thoughts on Realty Income is, well, I just bought several shares again early this week. And I find it one of the more interesting companies at the moment in this crazy market to buy more of. So I want to keep every month adding some Realty Income for the moment and build really out my position to, let's say, top 6, top 7 position.
You bought the dip. I like it.
Yeah, definitely.
I really like them as well. I tend to buy one or two shares every time I get a dividend from them, which is every month, because they're the monthly dividend paying company. And I've built up quite a sizable portion of them. So I just keep adding. Every time they pay me a dividend, I'll add one or two and keep going. I didn't add to them when the dip came. I've seen everybody on Twitter was hoping it got down to $55, but never got there. No, they're a really good company. Pay increasing dividends every year, pay every month. What more do you want?
Exactly. Well, then the last question from Alex, and he asked, what will be the biggest surprise, good or bad, from this upcoming dividend season?
I don't know. It's going to be a surprise. I don't know. I really don't know.
So I expect really some fireworks with the European companies, yeah, because they are all going to announce their annual dividends, and many of them, they only pay annually something. So I'm expecting fireworks at Bayer, like I mentioned last week. But I also expect some unexpected companies. So, just because of COVID-19, maybe willing to clean up their balance sheets. So I expect actually quite some firework with those companies. So it will be really interesting. And I'll have my coffee ready for the specifically the week of 5 February. Please note it in your calendar, because 5 and 6 February, wow, there will be massive news around annual reports.
Oh, sounds like a good date for another dividend day.
Oh, definitely.
Cool. I think that's all the questions we have this week. They were good questions. I didn't even get a chance to look over them before this, so they were all a surprise to me. But thanks a million to everyone. They were good questions, as always.
Well, then surprise us with your real estate stock pick of the week.
Yeah, well, my stock pick this week came from homework that I was given by Dividend Dane. So I put out something saying I was looking for more European REITs, and himself and indeed Phil gave me some suggestions. But one that I looked at was Vonovia from Germany. And like what you were saying, they hold 415,000 residential apartments. So they're really targeting that urban growth area, mostly in Germany, but they also are in Austria and Sweden as well. And what's interesting about them is that they're the only real estate company to be included in the Eurostoxx 50 as of September 2020, which I think is a pretty amazing feat considering they're only around for the last 7 or 8 years. But they've had some terrific growth. Their fund from operations, their dividend, they've been growing quite rapidly. I think what they are quite strong at is buying undervalued properties in probably less desirable areas maybe, and really maximizing the growth potential in them. They operate in four distinct segments. So they have property management, they've got residential environment, technical services and services center. So they're kind of all across the board in that area. And what is impressive was their growth. As I said, they've really, really grown over the last 7 years. If you look at their funds from operations, it was 15% compounded annual growth rate since 2013. The same with dividends. And their NAV, NAV per share has grown 16% over that time. So they look a really good company to in terms of growth. COVID barely impacted them. I don't think it impacted them at all, which kind of shows that they are a little bit resilient and maybe a good hedge at the moment if there's any downturn or anything like that. There is some concerns, which I have to note. So in Germany at the minute, there's huge political focus on them. So obviously when rents rise, it's the same area people like to give out. It's great for us investors, but not so great for families or people looking to rent. So I know Berlin have rent freezes at the moment. It hasn't really impacted them at this moment in time, but there's more legislation coming, so we have to wait and see how that plays out. They also significantly increased the number of shares, which is good for them. They saw an opportunity. The price was low, and they benefit from that money. But from a shareholder point of view, it dilutes your profit and dilutes your dividend. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, look, there is some concerns in that they've increased their debt with their acquisitions. I think they've bought a 30% stake in some French company, and they're growing that way as well. But look, I bought 10 shares purely because I liked them on first glance. They passed my screeners. I think they scored 81 purely from their growth figures. So I bought 10 shares, and that's enough then to keep me interested. So I will study them in a little bit more detail.
And remind me, what is their current dividend yield?
Their current dividend yield was about, I think it was 3%. It was around 3%. I can get it quickly, but I don't have it wrote down here, but it's around 3%.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds really interesting, actually. Yeah. So I will also have a look at this one. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, and that came from Dividend Dane. He pointed that out, and what's interesting is I was talking to Phil about it, and they don't fall under the jurisdiction of real estate investment trust in that they don't have to pay out the majority of their earnings. So I have to look in a little bit more into what that actually means and how that affects. They do say that they aim to pay 70%, and they have always paid 70% of their fund from operations and dividend. But I just need to understand a little bit more on how that affects them across the board.
Yeah, this is really cool. Another European REIT. We get a lot of questions always about the real estate market here in Europe. So it's really cool that you picked one.
Yeah, and nice. and hey, that's two now in the last while, and we've had one from Sweden, Kallström, and this. So they are out there. They are fairly strong in Europe, and it's nice that we can finally get some exposure to them, not just our US friends.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Okay, this brings us to the end of the show, and show EMF, and I really enjoyed it. It was nice to talk about Intel and to get your thoughts about it. I think the listeners have heard that I'm quite bearish on it, and you're a bit more bullish, but I think that that makes it so nice because we don't need like-minded people on these kinds of things.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear our listeners' thoughts on it as well. I'd like to get an opinion, or is there anything we've missed or maybe should consider, or maybe should I be a little bit more bearish? So if anyone has feedback, drop them in the comments or Twitter or blogs, wherever, and I'd love to hear from you.
Cool. So, EMF, have a good weekend. Don't do things that I wouldn't do. And speak to you next week.
See you next week. See you all, guys.